Welcome to the Student Housing Insight Podcast, the podcast that puts you in touch with the people who bring student housing to life. This is your host, Wesley Dees, and I'm joined with my co-host, Dr. April Hicks Konvalinka. April, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Wes. How are you?
Doing great. I want to remind everybody that today's episode is sponsored by us, Student Housing Insight. Let me explain a little bit. The response to the podcast in April, I know you just got back from a conference, so maybe you heard some of the same things I've been hearing, but the response has just really been awesome. And thanks to everyone who has come up to me, messaged or emailed me to say, hey, thanks for what you're doing. The content has helped me so much, or the podcast has helped me educate folks on my team. All this feedback has really reminded me there are so few platforms available for folks in our industry, to really get plugged in and network. So, we're planning some pretty big and exciting things to really evolve what we've started here. I'm not going to get into all the details right now, but, what I do want to make sure is that we've got the capability of communicating directly to those folks in our audience who want to get updates about that. So if you're listening to this on a regular basis, you're subscribed on iTunes, I really encourage you to head over to the website today at studenthousinginsight.com and click the Join Community button that is now at the top right-hand corner. So, again, this episode is sponsored by us. April, this is probably my favorite interview yet. I got to tell you.
Yeah, I'm so glad that Doug was able to join us and share his insight on university retention and student success. He's grown up in the industry, in the housing industry, and his father was the director of housing at University of Georgia many years ago. I would not say that he followed his father's footsteps, but certainly has found his place in higher education and student housing, and now is serving in his role at Clemson University as Senior Associate Vice President for Student Affairs. And so I'm glad that we were able to bring him on, and his information is very insightful, and I think our listeners will enjoy what he has to say.
You're exactly right about that, and I've got to tell our folks in the audience, if you're on the ownership or management side of our business, I really want you to lean into this conversation and listen to it two to three times if you need to. I'm constantly amazed at how many people in this industry are focused on the wrong things when it comes to establishing and maintaining relationships with university administration. And I'm going to get on my soapbox here for just a minute, April, and talk to my off-campus folks. But there have been so many times when I've met with the property manager for the first time, and I've asked, so, who do you have a relationship with on campus? And I commonly get the response of, well, I meet with the housing director a couple times a year, blah, blah, blah. And then I ask, oh, good. Well, what are you guys working on with that department? And then I get, oh, I've taken them a basket of cookies and some property brochures. Because, sometimes they run out of housing on campus and they need something to give to students who aren't able to bring on campus. And, my eyes just start rolling at that point. And let me say now to the marketing managers that are listening, be it on site or area managers. But if you're listening and you've done this before, I want you to pay close attention. You need to take your hourly wage and multiply it by the number of hours you've spent taking cookies and brochures to university administrators, and the dollars you spend on cookies and the related brochures. Once you've got that total, now I want you to write a check to the name of your property for the amount and stuff it in an envelope with a letter telling your owner that you are sorry for wasting their money. And that's just, I don't know how else to put that. This is not about doing the pharmaceutical calls, and sorry if I'm offending anybody that may have been a pharmaceutical rep that bought lunch for a bunch of doctors, but... And a lot of times I get this, but Wes, my university doesn't talk to off-campus properties because they don't want to show preferential treatment. you're missing the point. The university is there for the students. You have a job because of students. Your conversation with the university should be focused on how you can help them help their students. If you're not focused on that, then you really need to be thinking about going into conventional or some other area, because this is student housing, and that's where the focus has got to be. Sorry, April, I didn't mean to get on my soapbox too high, but the conversation really did, you know, just strike a chord with me on, you know, how many folks out there just, it's so simple to create these relationships and you know, you're, anyway, before I get to yelling, any comments from you?
Yeah, well, what I was going to say, Wes, is that everybody loves cookies, but cookies are not going to help students succeed. And so, you know, I agree with your sentiments. I do also agree. I believe that university officials also play a part in this, building relationships as well. And instead of university officials thinking that we're competing against these off-campus properties, at the end of the day, we're all here for students, and we need to keep that in mind as we are interacting with one another and as we are serving the needs of students. How can we best serve the needs of students, whether they live on campus or off campus? Cookies are great, but the conversation of how we can best serve the needs of our students should be at the forefront of everyone's mind.
Yeah, and there's so many. Let's get on to the interview, but there are just so many great examples that Doug mentions in this that, you know, my head was literally exploding after the call of, you know, God, there's just so many ways that, you know, if I was developing student housing, if I was managing and trying to turn something around in student housing that was underperforming, it really just comes back to the entire success of that project is really based on how well that relationship with the university is. And yeah, I know universities back off enrollment, they put other capital plans in place that, you know, changes the inventory of beds that are in the market that could really mess some things up for you. But at the end of the day, when you're talking about the longevity of a property and its success, it's really going to come down to how well you're communicating with the university and how much of a advocate both parties are for each other. So anyway, with that being said, I'm going to hit play and we'll come back with some takeaways. April, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Wes. How are you?
I'm doing great. So you've got a special guest today, and I'll let you go ahead and introduce him.
Awesome. Well, great. Well, it's great to be with everybody today. And as Wes has shared with you, I'm going to be hosting a few podcasts with an on-campus and university perspective. And today we have a very special guest joining us to discuss university retention and student success. And we hope that this information will impart why retention and student success is important for off-campus partners. And so without further ado, I would like to welcome Dr. Douglas Hollenbeck, who is the Senior Associate Vice President for Student Affairs at Clemson University. Welcome, Doug.
Go Tigers.
Well, thank you. Go Tigers always. But thanks, and glad to be here.
Well, we are certainly happy that you've joined us today and to provide your perspective on university retention and academic success. So we're just going to go ahead and jump right in.
Okay.
And so let's start off with why it's important for off-campus housing partners to understand and support university retention and student success.
Well, I think in general, if you look at institutions and all the pressures that are on colleges and universities these days, from a cost of attendance standpoint, from a why even go to college standpoint, that idea of what success is and why should somebody send their children off to college, I think is an important piece. And if you look at the university environment, typically anywhere from half to two-thirds of the students live off campus. So if you think about what success means for a student, a lot of that success happens outside the classroom and actually outside of campus. And so it's important from an institutional standpoint to understand what are all those factors that go into success and retention, sense of belonging, connection to campus, who they live with, who they're around, who they eat with, all those things I think are important. And for our off-campus partners, if they don't understand what the goals are for the institution in terms of retention rates, graduation rates, success in terms of GPAs and others for the institution, then how can they help meet those requirements? If we have a partner that is actively engaged in helping us help students graduate, that's a much better relationship with the institution than a partner that's really just concerned about filling beds and the bottom line.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. Yeah. We certainly want our students to graduate, whether that's 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, and especially for those students who are off campus, there needs to be that collaboration and connection with the university so they can be successful.
Yeah, well, amen.
Yeah. So from a university standpoint, talk to us a little bit more about why retention is so important to a university. I mean, yes, we want our students to graduate and to be successful, but talk a little bit more about from the retention standpoint.
Well, much like in any other business, it's much cheaper to keep somebody here than it is to recruit them and get them here. We put a lot of time and energy into our recruitment efforts from time that anymore many students are in middle school and high school to get them to our campuses. We put a lot of time and effort into them when they're here, whwhether it's an orientation or first year classes, all that sort of stuff that we put together and focus our attention on them. It's much better if they stay with us in terms of moving forward. So from a business perspective, it's a much better model to have more students with us that stay than trying to have to re-recruit people over and over again. So I think that's an extremely important part of it. And it's just a level of a measure of success for the institution. If you have a place that people want to be at, if you have a place that is right-sized in terms of academic rigor with the type of students that you're getting, students are going to want to stay there. And the longer that they stay there means that you're doing a better job as an institution.
Those are great examples. Thanks for sharing those. So in regards to student success or academic success, what are some initiatives that you've seen over time that have been important or valuable to a university that may be of interest to our off-campus housing partners?
I think the one, I'm not sure it's an initiative, but I think it's surely a need that we're seeing on campus recently, and especially with our off-campus market, is looking at our special, either our special populations or just our different populations that we have on campus. For example, international students, many of which here at Clemson are graduate students. Many of them are also, they all live off campus. And when we have things that happen nationally, like the executive order on travel, that has a direct impact on international students. And being able to support them in a way that is meaningful, that they feel safe and they feel like people care about them, can happen in many ways where they live. And if the apartment communities off campus help embrace that population, it's going to help them do better on campus, better in class, but it's also going to retain them at a different level. Same goes with other populations of students, whether it's Greek students, fraternities and sororities, whether it's underrepresented students, that really have that opportunity for us to put our arms around them in a way to help them feel supported and connected back to the institution. Other ways are there opportunities in apartment complexes for study groups? Are there opportunities for private studying outside of the apartment area? So study lounges, study rooms, community areas where people can go and study as well, I think are important aspects of it. And then anymore, anything doing with computers and internet connectivity and others so they can connect back to their classroom, since so much of it is done now online, is important. So those types of connections that we can have.
Doug, let me interject here for just a second and ask kind of just something that interests me. A lot of the things that I try to integrate into operational plans of properties that I've either overseen or when I'm consulting with someone, I really push them to think about the experience of a student. And so you mentioned study rooms, but you know, I've gone as far as to say, hey, look at how many kids look at how many students are starting their own business while they're in college. You know, maybe an incubator space or a co-working space is something that, you know, makes a lot of sense. And I've actually had, you know, a university come to me and say they wanted to be involved with that. And on the other side, I've also had a university that was a big research university that hated the idea because, you know, they wanted I'm assuming that, you know, it was stepping in on something that the university A, was not going to be able to control, but still, you know, it was a XYZ university student. And then the other part of that was, you know, they weren't going to be able to get the recognition that, you know, they felt like they needed. Expand on that a little bit. Are there things that you would advise off-campus providers to stay away from in situations like that?
Yeah, I don't know if there's things I would say they stay away from, but that idea of the what we would call maker space here on campus, where you have that kind of that opportunity for that that entrepreneurial incubator type space where people can create and make and do things, is something that we're doing here on campus. But it's also something that just needed, and so spaces like that, if you know, from an off-campus provider's standpoint, every institution is different. You know, Clemson University right now, we have big space issues. We our enrollment's grown to a point where we just don't have a lot of extra space. We don't have any extra space, and so that it would be possible for an off-campus partner to come to us and say, we might be able to do this for you, whether it's that idea of the maker space, whether it's study space, could be recreation space, whether it's weight rooms or pools or other opportunities there. All those things, I think, are possible. Even could be classroom space if the place was facility was close enough to where it made sense, which on some campuses that are right across the street, could be an opportunity to connect with the institution, I think, in different ways. Things that I think in general we would say that I'd say you want to stay away from would be anything that really too much infringed on academic freedom of our colleges that they owned in some special way, whether it's the research area or something along those lines. And then anything that we would consider that could just compromise the institution. For an example, we wouldn't want to have an off-campus provider having some type of counseling services that they wrapped up into the umbrella of, that might be considered student counseling services. I mean, you know, having a counselor that somebody can go to that would probably be fine, but connecting it to the institution would probably put us in risk in a way we wouldn't want that connection.
Great.
So we're going to switch gears a little bit. Doug, I wanted to have you share with us your perspective on how housing, off-campus housing partners could support university retention and student success, and maybe speak to the value to the university by that collaboration.
Well, I think there's several ways that really kind of go back to the community development, community building, having staff on site that do much like we do on campus housing, where you have staff members that are there to help support students and student success. So dealing with roommate issues, no matter if it's on campus, off campus, always is a big stressor for students. So what are those things that, like that, where we could limit the amount of stress on a student, whether it's roommate relationships, whether it's being there for them to be able to deal with other day-to-day things, things that come up, where they have somebody they can go to and kind of help just manage manage the systems, so to speak. So making sure that, you know, all the general kind of life necessities are being met in a certain way. The other part, I think, is understanding and knowing what the institution's retention goals and academic success measures are, in ways that we are looking at how we can help with those. You know, for example, we have a community coalition here at Clemson that has members of the city council, university, property owners, and others that are involved in our alcohol initiatives on how to limit alcohol abuse and alcohol use on campus. And we know that students drink more where they live than most other places. And so how can we engage with our off-campus partners in a meaningful way for alcohol education type initiatives? We also know that, you know, 1 in 4 students come to college with some type of diagnosed mental illness anymore. And so that's a significant area of growth and really explosion on college campuses across the country. And how can our off-campus housing providers assist in providing information back to the institution to help students who are in need or in crisis? So being connected with the Dean of Students office, if there's opportunity to do, we have care reports that you can go in to a system and on your computer and log in a report that you're just concerned about somebody, and are the property managers allowed to be a part of that? Can they submit care reports to the institution so we know that somebody's having a bad day, somebody has a concern, some type of mental health issue. Maybe a parent that has died that they know about that the university doesn't, that we can then engage with the student in a way to help, again, put our arms around them as a community and help them be successful. So I think those are the big ways. And then I think it's just open communication back and forth. What are you seeing within the student population from your perspective? What's the institution seeing it from our perspective? And being able to kind of balance that back and forth.
Yeah, I can provide a little bit of perspective on that care system that you're talking about, because, and it's, you know, it's all anonymous, you know. Yep. But we had a couple incidents of, as far as when I was overseeing some a couple of properties at Clemson, where the managers, you know, had some concerns about reports from roommates, you know, about activity or just a change in attitude. Mm-hmm. And we utilized that, and I can tell you, in one specific situation, we had a parent come back to us and just, you know, she hugged the manager's neck. Mm-hmm. Saying, "Hey, I really appreciate you doing this, because I don't know where my daughter would be right now." So
yeah.
So yeah, that's a great system that you guys have set up. Is that something that's generally being adopted at most universities? Because Clemson was really the first place where I at least experienced that they were, you know, stretching that out to local apartment communities to be involved with.
Yeah, I think it's an initiative more and more schools are going to across the country. I think since Virginia Tech incident several years ago now, it really shined a light on the fact that a lot of people had concerns about one student, but there was no connection between those. And the care network, it provides that opportunity to provide one place where people can go and say, "You know what? I don't know what it is, but I'm concerned," and can then log that concern, and then it's compiled in one place. So one person kind of oversees it, reads it, knows it, and so we can see those connectivities or those connections almost in real time, which I think is in this day and age pretty important.
Is that a platform that was specifically built by Clemson, or is that a national software provider that's providing that to campuses?
Yeah, we have a national provider, Maxient is who we use.
Okay.
Here on campus.
Gotcha.
So certainly the care for students is extremely important in today's world, with so many things happening across the country and at institutions, whether it be on campus and off campus, and the communication with off campus partners is vital. And I think Doug has provided some good insight into the importance behind that communication and care for our students, and setting up ways to share concerns of students with on campus, and on campus sharing concerns with those off campus. At the end of the day, students are students, no matter whether they live on campus or off campus, and we all have to work together to provide the best resources for our students so they can maintain their health, and whether it be a mental health issue or a crisis that they're dealing with, or a family loss. I certainly believe that it's important for us to care for all of our students, no matter where they are.
I think it's important.
In the crisis.
Yeah, I'm sorry, April. I think it's important for us to realize that none of us own student success, student support solely. So if somebody who doesn't work for the institution can help a student be successful, we should be happy and pleased with that, and not feel like, no, we need to be the ones that are doing that. And I think that's where that partnership and relationship is so important, because if you know somebody and you trust them, it's a lot easier to feel good about that than if you don't.
Sure. And I would say, from a university perspective, we would be delighted, we are delighted when off-campus partners are interested in the care for our students and want to work together to ensure that our students not only are safe, but that they're being successful as well. You know, I think about student conduct, and that's something that we haven't talked about on this conversation, but, you know, things happen off campus, and it's important for, whether it be the dean of students or the conduct office, that there is some sort of relationship with off-campus partners. And so, Doug, can you speak a little bit to that and your perspective of conduct and working with off-campus partners?
Sure.
In that regard?
Sure, and I think, you know, conduct obviously is a big area where that could intersect, especially going back to what I said a few minutes ago about alcohol and alcohol use. That tends to be the number one violation, at least on campus, usually. And how do we engage students off campus in the judicial process is, I think, interesting, because it can, one of the reasons students sometimes move off campus is so they're not bound by the rules of the institution in the same way. But we all know that there are times where behavior has gotten to a point that it is damaging to the community off campus. It's damaging to the community potentially on campus as well, that we need to be able to engage and have a system in place where property managers or others can come to the institution and say, we're having this problem with this apartment, with this student, we're concerned, and we'd like for you to help us engage in whatever the resolution is. I think is important, especially as it relates to things such as assaults, sexual misconduct, alcohol use, drug use, those types of things, which at least on our campus, we're not bound by the campus boundaries. If you're a student, we believe that you should be upheld to the student code of conduct. So that's important to us. We're not going to deal with situations that are specifically lease related, but when it becomes a behaviorally related that would violate our code of conduct, then I think it's important that we engage with each other and have those conversations. And I think it's even better if we have opportunities for our property managers to come together with our judicial area, with Dean of Students Office and others, to just have conversations in general about what we're seeing from a student behavioral standpoint, so we can do more preventive than always reactive solutions.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me talk a little bit from, as the experienced off-campus provider. I certainly didn't experience this at Clemson, and most universities I haven't experienced this, but there's a lot that I have experienced when, most of the national operators in the off-campus space, typically in their lease, have something about, you know, a violation of student conduct is a violation of the lease agreement as well, and therefore, you know, would be subject to you know, penalties within the lease agreement or the landlord tenant law by the jurisdiction, and mainly giving the landlord the opportunity to evict if there's something that's happened maybe on campus that didn't happen in the apartment. But there's been situations where I've gone to the university and said, hey, I need you to work with me on this and get me information when this kind of stuff happens, if, you know, if they live with us. And in a lot of situations, they have not wanted to do that either because of privacy issues. And then that's one part of it. The other part of it is I'll have something that happens off campus. You know, maybe it's a, you know, maybe it was a, they got caught with marijuana or something like that. And we want to, you know, we don't want them necessarily kicked out of school, but, you know, we want to make sure that they're, that student or the judicial department is aware of it. And if they, you know, they can act on their own, whatever they want to do. And I've literally had administrators come to me and say, please do not bring this report to me. Mainly because they've got a paper trail and it, you know, it also hurts them from a standpoint of, you know, now they've got to act on something. Is there a better way we should approach that as off-campus providers?
Yeah, let me try to unpack some of that first part, and then I'll get to the second part. Generally speaking, it's the way it should work here. It's the way I think it should work most places. That it would be against the law for us to provide academic records, and we would consider their judicial record part of their academic record to a non-university entity without some type of waiver being signed. So violations of the student code of conduct, we wouldn't be able to share that with property owners and property managers unless there was a specific waiver that was provided that would allow us to do that. So that's always going to be, I think, a sticking point between the institution and if that's part of the lease, because that's just not something legally we can share. Now, whether or not you could work it into some lease language that then provide that waiver and then we could do that, that may be possible, but you'd have to have a pretty good relationship with the judicial office just to know that that was an ongoing part of it moving forward. The second part of that is I'd go back to the care network in terms of an opportunity where that's a system where you could report the violations. I would be and maybe I just and a little prima donna-ish in this regard. I would hate to think that we had universities out there that are saying don't tell us about violations of the student code of conduct. Now, we don't want to know if you think somebody's being too noisy. And, you know, we're not going to enforce noise policy violations and that sort of stuff. But alcohol, drugs, abuse, disorderly conduct, those type of bigger things that are concerns of ours, we would I think we should know about it and would want to know about it. And part of it may be more of an opportunity to engage in conversations about what's a report and what's just a what's a conversation. Some code of conducts are written in a way that we might have that information, but you can't really process it. Other schools have different code of conducts that would say, yes, we can enforce that off campus. So part of it's just understanding kind of what that is and how do we move forward kind of in that regard. But I would hate to think that we would know about a student who's using drugs and we just, and you know about it and you could have told us and we didn't do anything about it because it was, we're just too busy. And then something really bad happens like overdose or some type of crime that's related to that would be pretty tragic.
Yeah. And in the particular situation that, I've had it happen in multiple, multiple markets, but the one that was the most memorable we were reporting these things to the Dean of Students office, and it was literally that you know, I'm not obviously going to name names, but it was the Dean of Students that said, look, every time you do this, my people have got, you know, 10 pages worth of work that they've got to do. And it was over parties. That was the biggest thing. We were, you know, it was an issue for the neighborhood. It was an issue for, you know, for the university to some degree if those parties got out of hand. And we were just saying, look, we're working with the police. We're working with everybody else to get this, you know, to do what we need to do. But we would like to add just a little bit more teeth to it. And now, fast forward a couple years, and there's an incident, and we're working with not only the police but the campus police, and we say, look, this was the issue that we ran into. You know, the chief of police for that campus unit, you know, was immediately, you know, you just start bringing them to me. I'll make sure that they get to the dean's office and are followed up with.
Yeah.
So, a lot of times it's just who you talk to, because, you know, if somebody, every organization's got somebody that doesn't necessarily care about doing the right thing. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and part of it is, I think, it's just a result of lack of resources and lack of staffing, too. And I think that's where those community coalitions can help, where you're engaged. You know, like, you're engaged with the police and the university, but if more of the groups are, then you can really start developing a system on how do you handle the dissemination of information about parties and others, and how do we engage with those and those pieces. That may be a way to help that.
Yeah, great.
Well, this kind of moves into the importance of having a relationship or conversations with the campus. And so for those off-campus partners or even university campuses that do not have a relationship with one another, how would they go about beginning that conversation or developing that relationship so the conversations that you have just talked about could actually happen?
I think one is trying to find, who on that campus is responsible the most for off-campus students or issues. On this, we have an Office of Advocacy and Success here at Clemson, and they do a lot with our off-campus community coalition, off-campus apartment complexes and others. So finding that person on campus and just going and having FaceTime, sitting down and talking and listening and understanding the university and the university system, and then sharing information. But generally, I think that's the best way, and being persistent and being there often. So it doesn't have to be an hour a week, but just dropping by, saying, hey, just making sure everything's going okay, if you need anything from us, that can go a long way. Everybody's busy, but I think having those face-to-face opportunities can be pretty important.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the event that, you know, from my experience, if you have conflict between maybe an off-campus partner and a university campus, you know, what's the best way for someone to, if they've tried to reach out and they've tried to have those relationships and there has not been success, do you have any suggestions on for an off-campus partner or even a university partner or a university to try to mend that relationship? And, you know, ultimately we're all here for students, well, and provide housing, sure, or provide an opportunity for students to be successful. But how do you move through that potential conflict
I think just in general, it goes back to, one, if you can try to figure out what the roadblock is. Is it time? Is it resources? Is it personalities? Is it somebody did something 5 years ago that ticked somebody off and they still hold the grudge? And just figuring out how to navigate that. Or are you talking to the right person? And I think sometimes we miss the boat where we think, You figured it was maybe it was the it should have been the dean of students' office, but maybe on this campus it's really more the housing office, or maybe it's the or new student and family programs area, whatever. But trying to find somebody that's willing to engage and have that conversation, and you can begin to have develop those relationships with. So I think, again, I don't have great answers for people that don't get along, other than keep working at it, be persistent, and then if you're not finding who you think is working with you, find somebody else and see if you can't work through those angles.
Sure, and ultimately, you know, going back to the beginning of our podcast, you know, we've been talking about university retention and academic success, student success, and the importance behind understanding university retention and student success, and certainly those relationships and open communication really can benefit our students and also university and off-campus partners as well. Doug, we really appreciate your time today. This has been wonderful, and you've provided some insight that our listeners are going to enjoy and hopefully take back to their perspective areas and I don't know what I'm trying to say, blah, blah, blah. Doug, go ahead.
Well, Doug, I'll ditto to everything she just said, and really appreciate you taking the time out to come on the show. Mm-hmm. And I think there's definitely more that folks from both sides, but especially on the apartment mm-hmm. Private side mm-hmm. that needs to folks need to think about. Yes. You know, it's all about the relationship. It's not let's don't wait until an incident happens, and let's all be on the same page. So,
exactly.
I appreciate your time, and appreciate you discussing those things. I think that'll help people out quite a bit.
Well, wonderful. Glad to do it, and thrilled to be here.
Well, great. Well, go Tigers. Sorry about Syracuse.
Well, you know what? We were having this great opportunity together. We were having this nice conversation. You're going to bring up we've lost three games in 3 years, and you're going to talk about one of them? I mean, come on. My goodness.
Well, you know, there was the loss to Pittsburgh last year. And everybody bounced back from that. No, so.
I know. Yeah. You know, we're still defending national championship champions with an opportunity to keep going. So we're we're in good shape.
I'm excited. Yep. The facilities and everything that have come into play there over the past couple of years have just been amazing.
Been unbelievable. So. Yep.
Well, great. I appreciate it, and we'll talk to you soon.
Great. Thank you.
Well, April, I'll say it again. I think that's one of the best interviews that we've had on this show, if not the best. Thanks very much for reaching out to Doug and getting him on the show, because I think everybody can benefit from that. Yeah, a couple of takeaways that I wanted to hit on. If you're a management company, specifically if you're a general manager or property manager of an on-site team, one of the things that Doug hit on, right off the bat, is really understand the university's mission. Just because you're not employed by the university doesn't mean that really kind of excuses you from not understanding the university's mission. And behind that, what are the things that they're measuring to deliver on that mission? One of those being student retention. And I think that's really important, that you need to know that well enough so that you can have a conversation with an administrator or, even your property owner to really be able to verbalize how the university is meeting those needs and that mission. So, the other thing, April, that he mentioned that just kind of really struck a chord with me, and I know it did with you as well, is, paying attention to the different demographic groups. And he mentioned, the international students, and when the travel ban came into play, that was such of a good example. And I don't know if you want to expand any more on that.
Well, I definitely agree. I definitely believe that could be its very own podcast in itself. International students, they are for for many folks. It's a different group of students to work with because of the time that they are with us in the United States, and certainly believe that a future podcast is in store just to discuss international students and how to best work with them.
Yeah, I definitely think so. There's a lot of groups that are working to help transition, that whole move from home country and back and forth. And that's been one thing that I think this industry, specifically on the off-campus side, has lacked in a lot of ways. And the university, in a lot of situations, the university just doesn't even know who those students are going to be until they show up. And in a lot of cases, I think off-campus housing providers may have more information than the university has, as far as when they're going to arrive and that type of thing. So that, that's another point of where, both groups can collaborate and help each other out with that student. Well, I shouldn't say a specific student, but with that group of student and their experience with the whole process. And it all goes back to not only their success, but same thing with domestic students. You want them to have a great experience, so they'll tell their friends about it, and they refer other people to the community and into the university. And I think that's even more the case with these international groups, because if they go back home and they've had a really good experience, their family members and their friends there are certainly going to follow their lead and ask them a lot of questions on that. So what other takeaways did you have, April?
I think a takeaway that I had that I think it's extremely important for all listeners is the care and concern for students. And so when you have situations that occur off campus and you're concerned about a student, or if there's a conduct issue with a student that's off campus, I think it's important to meet with the dean of students or meet with your contact person at the university to share that concern for the student. Because again, the ultimate goal is for students to be successful. And if they are under some stress or strain or dealing with a mental health issue or whatever the issue may be, it's important to get them connected to university's personnel to provide them the resources for them to work through whatever their issue may be and to get them back on the path to be successful and persist throughout their time at the institution.
Yeah. I think the last takeaway that I could give to our listeners, and especially those on the development side, originally I was going to have this topic kind of covered on the first series, and I think this overlaps both very well, both the operations as well as the development side. And I would say to the developers that are out there, be it new or you've got many years of experience, obviously we've talked before about making sure that when you're doing your market research that you're meeting with the university and finding out, how can the property help their housing needs, right? And that is something that is a very mathematical type of thing. But what also needs to be a part of that conversation is, what other ways can we help the university? What other programs are they trying to get implemented? And it's not necessarily, giving them money for athletic sponsorships or things like that. But seriously, we've got 17,000 square feet of amenity space that we're, needing to find something to do with. And I'm really not sold that a lazy river is helping anybody. So, hey, dean of students or whoever you may be speaking with, is there something, is there a department within the university that could really use that space? And I mean, what a great way to, start that relationship with the university by doing something like that. And just talking about Clemson, I mentioned to you before, Clemson's got this great little downtown strip that would have been great for like an art gallery or something like that. And some of these new student housing developments have come in and eaten up that real estate and, you know, have retail on the first floor. What a great opportunity that would have been for an art gallery, because if you've gone to art galleries on campus, they're hidden. They're out of the way. And, you know, I think there's some great opportunity there to think out of the box and do something very neat with the universities that we support. So,
absolutely.
Well, listen, I think we've talked everyone's ear off today. So until next week, we'll talk to you later again. April, thanks for setting this up and being my co-host today. And
you're welcome.
We'll talk later.
All right.